As we began the new year on The Takeaway, we noted what many people are doing is looking ahead, of course, to 2011, particularly the president.
Well, yeah.
And following the midterm elections in November.
The second half of his presidency. You know.
Exactly. When the second half of the presidency begins, the question is, are those midterm elections a low point? And that things are turning around. We saw the unemployment rate go from
9.8. I don't think anyone's going to call them a high point.
No. Well, but the question is, will we go lower?
Ah.
And unemployment improving on Friday may be a suggestion that the bottom has been reached and that the 2011 is a turnaround year for the president.
Remember that after the elections, because he got all that stuff passed in the lame duck session, people were calling him universally the comeback kid.
Well, comeback kid, we've heard that from another president of the 90s. And certainly there are some echoes of the Clinton presidency and the appointment of Gene Sperling to be the chief economic advisor of President Obama as one of the first acts in the new year. Joining us now to continue our conversation on how crucial 2011 will be for President Obama and if he is poised to turn things around or if the trends are decidedly negative. Roger Hodge joins us. He's the former editor-in-chief of Harper's Magazine and the author of The Mendacity of Hope, which I think it's fair to say is a fairly strident criticism of President Obama from the left, from the perspective of the left. First of all, good morning, Roger.
Good morning.
And, you know, let's just say if we're going to, and we don't need to dwell too much on the year 2011, but if this were to be a turnaround year or a legacy year for President Obama to change the trends that we saw so disturbingly in 2010, which turned out so disturbingly in the election, what would we be looking for?
Well, I think we shouldn't kid ourselves. It's too late. Obama had an opportunity coming in to do something radical, to reset American politics, to really capitalize on the momentum that brought him into office. And he spent the last 2 years squandering his political capital on initiatives that did not put Americans back to work. He saved the plutocrats who paid for his campaign, but he ignored the voters who actually put him into office. So I don't think he has much room to maneuver in 2011.
So you would describe Bill Daley, the new chief of staff, who comes from J.P. Morgan and is part of the sort of Chicago political establishment, as a plutocrat or just same old, same old?
I think same old is very accurate, but so is plutocrat. I mean, Daley comes out of the Chicago machine, but he is not an old-style Chicago Paul. He is a new-style corporate machine politician. He is coming out of the executive committee of J.P. Morgan Chase, and so we're going to see more of the same. I mean, it's not that he's going to be the cause of what Obama does or doesn't do. He's just a reflection of where Obama's priorities lie, just as his first round of appointments were.
Although people would say that, in fact, it was the radicalism of healthcare reform, at least as the way it was received by Americans, that turned people off to Obama, and that a Bill Daley and a Gene Sperling are a sign of returning to the successful Clinton centrist formula, and that's really what the Democrats need to do to retake the House and to have a chance for the White House in 2012. How do you respond to this? Is Obama the centrist? Come on.
Well, I think Obama governed as a centrist during his first 2 years. I think the insurance bailout, so-called health reform, reflects that. I think that the people are disgusted with the health care bill for good reasons and bad reasons. There are good things to say about that bill, but there's a lot of valid criticism both from the left and the right.
Well, but one of the good things you can say about it is it's the first real serious legislative action we've seen on healthcare in an extraordinarily long time. I mean, to a certain extent, there's only so much the president can do unilaterally. I mean, Washington, if you say it's dysfunctional, how much can the president do on his own to change that?
Nothing on his own. But it's a bad bill. I mean, you can say, oh, it's a big bill. It's a big healthcare bill. It has certain very noble aspirations, but it doesn't address the major issue, which is controlling costs. And the problem is not that people don't have health insurance. The problem is that we have health insurance as the basis of our healthcare delivery system.
A private sector health insurance. You would argue that short of single payer, there's not enough benefit to create a constituency that's pro this bill. And there are way too many critics that can draw a target around the bill and defeat it. And so he's sort of painted himself into a corner.
Exactly.
Let's move away from healthcare for just a moment. You hear President Obama saying this in one of his weekly radio addresses or internet addresses. And what do you hear?
At this moment, our nation is facing a host of big and difficult challenges. And more than anything else, what's required to meet those challenges right now is a sense of cooperation and common purpose among our leaders. What we need is a willingness in Washington to put the public's interest first, a willingness to score fewer political points so that we can start solving more problems.
He can't do it alone. As you've said, he's looking for cooperation and bipartisanship. He's not getting it. He's the victim here.
Well, what I hear are platitudes, and it's just the same sort of thing that he's been saying from the beginning. Obama really should have come in and started a fight. This dream, this Washington dream of bipartisanship is just a joke. It's not going to happen. The Republicans aren't going to work with him. They're going to sink him, and they're doing a very good job of sinking
him. But this is a dream he was relatively honest about during his campaign. I mean, he said the whole time he was campaigning that he wanted to strive to reach across the aisle and build a bridge between the two parties.
Sure, but so what? I mean, so what? He promised, sure, and I opposed him. I've been opposing him since 2006. In Harper's Magazine, we've been running critiques from the beginning, before he even declared. It's been very clear from the very beginning, since he arrived in the Senate, that he was a typical conventional corporate Democrat.
Yet, in both of his books, he clearly is mindful of a legacy of a legacy of radicalism, of a legacy of some sort of significant Kennedy-esque kind of sense of change, if not the actual policy change. How do you reconcile that with your very articulate description in your book, Mendacity of Hope, that there's a huge continuity between the Bush administration, particularly on issues of justice, and the Obama administration?
Obama is a very eloquent rhetorician. He understood. He grasped the fact that Americans wanted change, and so he campaigned on change. But politicians always campaign on change. If you read his writings and you read his speeches, it's very clear that he was signaling to corporate America that they had nothing to fear, and that's why the people who created this financial crisis universally really supported him. If you look at his major political investors, which is the way you should think about these people, they are investors who want a return. They put the money in. He's the champion fundraiser of all time.
Well, we'll see if the economy turns around and they get their return. If it's an investment that we're looking at, the economy, stupid, is really the place to focus. Roger Hodge, author of The Mendacity of Hope, a critique of the Obama presidency, a look at 2011, how crucial will it be for this, the second half of the Obama presidency? Roger, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.